If we turn to Leviticus 23, there's an outline of the annual holy days that God has granted to physical and spiritual Israel. And if we go through into Leviticus 23, it says on verse 34, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th of this seventh month shall be a feast of tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord." Verse 35, "On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it." And it goes on and really describes how important it is to get away from the rest of the world, of the ordinary way of doing business, to get away from our usual lives. But then what do we do? So let's drop down to verse 40, and I'm going to break into the verse. And you, in Leviticus 23, down in the middle of verse 40, "And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days." That's an instruction. You shall rejoice. So we have then this expectation, thank you, that we need to go have a good time. It's sort of like asking your parents, "Dad, can I have the car keys?" And he says, "Yeah, here's the car keys and $100. Go have a good time." I don't really expect that kind of thing to have a good time. By the way, my dad never did that. But it always sounded kind of neat. And then if we read down in verse 41, we read, "You shall celebrate it." It goes on in the seventh month. So we hear the words rejoice. We hear the words celebrate. Well, how can we rejoice? Is there a guide to help us make the most of the feast? Well, the title of today's message is Control the 5 M's to Have the Best Feast Ever. Control the 5 M's, the letter M, to have the best feast ever. And I really got this idea. There was a meme that was circulating about the 5 M's, about 5 points that we can use that if we can control these 5 things, lives go better for us. So just what are these 5 M's that is going to give us the best feast ever? And the first one, and I had to laugh when I read this, was mouth, our mouth, what we say. And first of all, what do we say to God in prayer? And if we read to in 1 Thessalonians 5:18, here's one thing to read is in 1 Thessalonians 5:18, "In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." So if we're going to approach God in prayer with regard to the fall holy days, and particularly the Feast of Tabernacles coming up, just 3.5 weeks, "In everything give thanks." So are we thankful? Do we use our mouth to voice that level of gratitude? In Philippians 1, and starting in verse 3, Philippians 1, verses 3 and 4, "I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you of all with joy." So praying for other people, being thankful for the ones that we are surrounding ourselves with. So it isn't just thanking God for his blessings, but for the people that God has placed us with and about. Now, and I didn't have to write the verse down, but the prophet Samuel's mother was Hannah. And she wasn't able to conceive and prayed heartily to God that she might have a child. And when she did, she said, "I'm dedicating this child to the service of God." And so little Samuel was born, and as I recall the verse saying, people saw her moving her lips because she was giving her prayer of gratitude to God, but there was no voice coming out. She was grateful for the chance to become a mother, to have a little boy that could be used in the service of God. And so those are what we say with regard to prayers. And then there's what we say to other people. And then in other words, what we say aloud to other people. And if we take a look, and I'm going to start in Proverbs 12, verse 25. It's really in Proverbs 12, 25. It's always helpful if we're going to talk to other people and we're going to enjoy the feast, always start with a compliment. Say something nice and pleasant. Proverbs 12, 25. "Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad." Don't you like, isn't it more fun to be around somebody who's uplifting and positive and considerate and kind of exudes a level of joy and they bubble it? In Proverbs, we're already in the book of Proverbs. Let's go to Proverbs 15, verse 23. In Proverbs 15, 23, a man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. Ever have an opportunity to say just the right thing at just the right time? It's sort of like frosting on the cake. It's something special, something extra. Of course, we all know there's the other comments too. And I'll turn to Ephesians 4, verse 29. When somebody says something aloud to someone else, in Ephesians 4, 29, I'm going to read this in the English Standard Version. Everything else, unless I quote otherwise, will be from the New King James. In Ephesians 4, 29, let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. No corrupting talk. So building up, not tearing down. Kind of reminds my dad, who is not a church member, but we had a neighbor growing up on the farm, and there was a neighbor farmer that didn't ever have anything good to say. And when they had neighborhood meetings, my dad would come home and say, he missed a perfectly good opportunity to keep his mouth shut. How many people do we know like that, that they miss those opportunities to not be building up, but to be tearing down? And so, that's in prayer to God, we're thankful, and in our conversations to others, to be complimentary, to build them up. And another category, and then I put this into the mouth category, is what we eat. We go to the feast, the word feast. We're going to enjoy that, physical food. And then we go, and I'm going to turn to Deuteronomy 14:26. Deuteronomy 14:26 is probably people's favorite verse about the feast. Because when you read Deuteronomy 14:26, you hear this, yeah, this is what I want. And you shall spend that money. It's talking about saving your festival tithe for whatever your hearts desire. We're talking food, for oxen, sheep, for wine, and similar drink. Whatever your heart desires, you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. Notice when people get together what they really enjoy doing? Sharing a meal, and have that great opportunity for that. And the word feast goes right together with physical food and physical eating. And people get there. Where can we go? What can we do? How can we share those experiences with others and sample things that we wouldn't otherwise do? For me, I don't get Domino's pizza very much, but I try to do it once a year, but I can't do it when it's not in the United States. So one of these years, I may be able to try that again, but that's about the only time I do. I think last time we were in Branson, we had a Domino's pizza party, and people all came in, and we enjoyed that. But the other part of the physical food section, the second half of the feast, and I found this out some years ago by being a feast coordinator, and in James 5:14, we'll turn there in a moment, the second half of the feast is when people enjoyed themselves so much for the first 4 days that the next 4 days, there's a lot of illness. And so what happens is, getting to the feast, if you're on an airplane, my uncle, retired airline pilot, said the air is reprocessed. They're going up 35,000 feet in the air. They don't have a fresh source of oxygen. They reprocess all of the air. And in so doing, it strips all of the moisture out. And the airplane is drier than the Sahara Desert. It will suck the moisture out of you. And so the airlines try to serve beverages on the plane. But traditionally, you are at risk because you lack hydration on an airplane. But the same thing is true when you're traveling anywhere. You're changing your pace. And so I know that my visitors know, to our house, I drink a pint of water first thing every morning and get that 16 ounces down first upon waking up. and then proceed to try to get 8 glasses of water per day to fully hydrate to keep my immune system strong. But what happens at the feast? We do other things. We're busy. We stay up late. We get up early to make up for it and push the limits on what we eat. We overload on certain foods that might reduce our immune system. And what kind of food would reduce our immune system? And I can testify to this. I know that eating too much sugar will reduce my immune system by 70%. Just pop it in, boom, and it reduces that. So I got to be balanced meals. And one thing I read earlier, I didn't put it down in my notes as to what the source was, but eat foods that have a variety of colors. If you eat separate color, different colors of foods, you're more likely to get a balanced meal. Sounded reasonable to me. But what happens is, in James 5:14, is any among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church. Let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. So the first 4 days of the feast, there's rarely any anointing. And then the next 4 days, what do we get? There's almost like a steady stream of people who are short on sleep, didn't hydrate properly, ate too much of the wrong stuff, or not enough of the right stuff. And that's physical food. And then there's our, in the mouth section, number one, is the spiritual food. What are we consuming in spiritual food? And when we're gone from home, we disrupt our normal, everyday lives. Do we then do our same daily preparation? Do we do the same daily prayer, the same Bible study each day, so that we can consume a spiritual diet as we do under our normal routine at home, and not just rely on engagement at the feast to take care of all that? We don't want to get spiritually sick because we're so busy doing other things. So the first M that we must learn to manage or control is the mouth, both physical and a spiritual application. The second M that we must learn to manage is our mind. Our mind. And the first part I part is what we allow to be put into our minds. And well, what do we put into our minds? Whether it's television, movies, internet memes or reels, and critical, what do we put in our mind the last 30 minutes of the day? Because that programs our mind as to whether or not we're going to get a good night's sleep, and pre-programs our dreams and such. So it's important to put the right things into our mind and not be carried away just because we're out of sequence from our normal life and we're at the feast. If we take a look in 1 Corinthians 15:33, in 1 Corinthians 15:33, we read, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." You can go, "Well, yeah, but I didn't. I met all good feast people." Folks, electronic media can be evil company. So we have to be careful of that and guard ourselves from the electronic media that might be evil company. So we can't be deceived. Don't deceive ourselves because it says corrupts good habits. We want to keep those good habits up if we want to have a good feast. And then we read the Apostle Paul writing in 2 Timothy 4:10. In 2 Timothy 4:10, we read the Apostle Paul writing to his protege, Timothy. He said, "For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica." In other words, the fellow, his traveling companion, got carried away, was distracted by the world, instead of the mission that Paul was on, the mission of the church, the mission of preaching the gospel, was carried away by what? This present world. We are soaked in this present world. This is the water we swim in, whether we like it or not. This is where we're at. So we have to take a tight hold or a tight grip on the truth and not follow Demas's example and love the world so much that we wander away from preaching the truth and adhering to it. Demas wasn't the only one. The Bible is full of examples. One of the most dramatic ones is in 1 Kings 11 and verse 4. In 1 Kings 11 and verse 4, We read about King Solomon, son of King David, in 1 Kings 11, verse 4, "For when it was so, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David." He allowed, just like Demas allowed the present world to drag him away, Solomon had a weakness, and he allowed then his wives, predominantly foreign wives, turn his heart away to other gods. Changed what his focus was. So what should our focus be? In Philippians 4 and verse 8, Philippians 4 and verse 8, what should we focus on every day? Well, I reminded many years ago when computers were first coming out, there was a statement, and I think it's still true, garbage in, garbage out. If you put junk under the computer, you're going to get junk coming out. It's not going to work out well for you. Now, there's a comparison. You can put good stuff in, you stand a better chance to get good stuff coming out. In Philippians 4, in verse 8, Philippians 4, 8, we read, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." Is that what our focus is every day? On the good stuff? Or do we focus on the garbage? Because garbage in, garbage out. That's what we're going to produce unless we focus on or meditate on all of those things. True, noble, just, pure, lovely, of good report, and virtue, and praiseworthy. Those are all nice words. It's nice to spend our time focusing on that. Now, Romans 12:2, we have this reinforcement in the letter to the Romans. "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God." So our focus at the Feast of Tabernacles is using that opportunity to transform our mind, to build ourselves up that we may have more ammunition to prove what is good and acceptable. What is the will of God? Proverbs 4 and verse 23 talks about protecting our heart. In other words, where's our internal focus? In Proverbs 4, 23, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life." And we're talking here about eternal life, which God has invited us to join in the kingdom of God. So number two, the second M, is mind. What we put in is what we get out. So it's important to put the right stuff in. The third M that we must learn to control to have a great feast is mood. The third M is mood. And the first point I put is setting and expecting a positive mood. This is a daily thing. We have to make the choice every day that day is going to be a good day. In Psalm 118, verse 24, it's nearly right in the middle of your Bible. Psalm 118, verse 24, about setting a positive mood for the day. Do we rise up and we say this in Psalm 118, verse 24? "This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." Wow. Wouldn't it be nice every day we could grasp that day and do that. In 2 Timothy 1:3, again, the Apostle Paul wrote to Timothy. In 2 Timothy 1:7, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Well, in the New King James, it says a sound mind. God gives us in the complete English version, it uses the term, "The Spirit gives us power, love, and self-control." So New King James says a sound mind. The CEV translation says self-control. The CSB Christian Standard Bible says sound judgment, which means making good decisions. Well, isn't it better to make good decisions? And you do that when you're in a better mood. Should you make big decisions when you're in a bad mood, probably not the best way to have the best feast, because things happen everywhere. So let's use that sound mind, self-control, sound judgment, make good decisions for experiencing a positive mood. What's the benefit of that? Well, when we're at the feast, we are an island away from the world. We've put off a lot of the world. We're there with brethren, with many others who are like-minded thinkers who have the Spirit of God flowing through them. And this gives us an opportunity to build each other up. We don't know the circumstances of everybody who comes there. Some of them barely struggled. They drag themselves in. They're just happy to get away from wherever they were. And they got in the door and they're grateful and they're so thankful. In Psalm 34 and verse 18. In Psalm 34 and verse 18. In the New King James, we're talking here about building up others who may be suffering. The Lord is near to those who have a broken heart and saves such as have a contrite spirit. Let's look in the complete English version, the CEV. The Lord is there to rescue all who are discouraged and have given up hope. In the ERV, or English Revised Version, the Lord is close to those who have suffered disappointment. He saves those who are discouraged. So people come and they're relieved to be able to get to the feast and they're relaxed, but they may go back and say, I don't know if I've got a job when I go back. I don't know how I'm going to pay the rent. I don't know how I'm going to pay utilities. I don't know how I'm going to pay my car insurance or whatever it happens to be, that they are going to be, that they don't have a lot of hope, but at least they got there. They were happy for that. We don't know who they are, but at least they got there. I wouldn't be the only person who came home from a feast and there was with no job. That happens. In Hebrews 10, in verses 24 and 25, it tells us the value of building each other up. Hebrews 10, verses 24 and 25. Let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. Isn't that nice? Stir up. Ever stir up something? What if you don't stir up a pot of something that you're cooking on the stove? What happens if you don't stir it up? Burns and gets all crusty on the bottom, right? Doesn't cook consistently. Verse 25, Hebrews 10, 25. For not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. You know, some people, they're disappointed. They stayed home. They just didn't make it. Or they got to the feast, but they didn't go to the church service. You know, and you're going, wait a minute. This is pretty important stuff here. They need our encouragement there. So point three is about the mood. Our mood is up to us. Every morning, it's up to us to start each day with an expectation of joy and then to be able to spread that joy. The fourth letter M that we have to learn to control, and that is manners. Manners, how we treat others, whether it's in private or in public. I know my parents were very insistent on proper manners, and you'd better never get caught not minding your manners. And so how we treat others in private and in public. In Titus 3:2, Paul writes to Titus to speak evil of no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to all men. Speaking evil of no one. Isn't that kind of hard to do? Kind of reminds me of my parents had four boys in 5 years. And my youngest brother, who shall remain nameless for this message, was a smart aleck. And my father very sharply said, if you can't say something nice about your brother, don't say anything at all. And so what did he do? He turned to my brother and went, He kept his mouth shut and made a humming noise. So he wasn't going to speak evil. Following Dad's instructions, he didn't speak evil. He was going to be peaceful and gentle, but he made his wishes known. In Romans 12 and verse 10, Romans 12 and verse 10, be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, and in honor giving preference to one another. You know, that's giving preference to one another doesn't mean replacing yourself or what's in your best interest. In the English Standard Version, it says, love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor, being gracious. Now, in 1992, I was working in Los Angeles, and the Rodney King riots developed. Those of you who are old enough to know that, remember that time. The rest of you can look it up on Wikipedia or elsewhere. But my place was 23 miles from the office. And the day that the riots broke out, they broke out in the evening. Next day, I went to work early. Building was all still there, 70,000 square foot warehouse and office space. We said, it's looking bad. All the office workers, you can go home and go home early. Just wrap up, put your affairs in order. We backed up all of the company's computers three different ways and sent them home with three different people. So one of those ought to be able to be safe. When we did that, and when it was wrapped up, and I had my own personal computer, not a laptop. This was, after all, this was 1992. Laptops weren't real big then. So I had my own desktop computer. I'm hauling it out the front door, my computer. I step out the door. The nearest riots are six blocks away, where they were destroying a Denny's restaurant. Fire truck and police cars were screaming by with the lights flashing, and I'm walking out, and there's rioting and looting going on. I'm walking out the front door of this big commercial building carrying a computer. And I could see them put the brakes on, look at me, decide I wasn't worth it, and kept on going. I thought, next time I better pay more attention to my surroundings. But I remember that, and then I went home. It took 3 hours to drive 23 miles. And those of you that have been in big city traffic know that there aren't a lot of polite, nice people there. Those 3 hours were the most polite 3 hours I have ever spent in city traffic ever. Every intersection, every place, it was somebody. It was sort of like, you go first. No, you go ahead and go first. Oh, please, go ahead, you know, kind of approach. Everybody was deferential to everyone else. It was so, and I thought of these verses about honoring one another, showing brotherly affection. They were all scared to death for fear that they would be the target of the next problem, or a chunk of the riot. But they were all trying to outdo each other with showing honor to everyone else. Very memorable. But what was that? 33 years ago. still remember sharply in my mind. In Galatians 5 and verses 22 and 23, in manners, what does that mean? Manners are a reflection of our conversion. Galatians 5, starting in verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against us, such there is no law. In other words, do we use our approach, our conversion to Christianity, to demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit? And these are opportunities to do that when we're at the feast with regard to manners. So point four is manners. Let us all allow the fruit of the Spirit to flow forth as we keep the feast. Now, the fifth M that we must learn to manage or control is money. Money, money, money. Now, some people, they go to the feast, it's like a free-for-all for the first half of the feast. whoa, I got more money now on that per day than I've ever had. I'm going to go have a good time. And if we take a look at Luke 14, starting in verse 28, Luke 14, starting in verse 28. And what do you suppose to the happens to the people that have a grand old time when they start? It's like they got their foot on the accelerator and they're on spending money, and they're having a good time. They're rejoicing, all right. But they spend out most of their budget in the first half of the feast. It's they just don't know how to keep hold of it. In Luke 14, starting in verse 28. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Verse 29, lest after he's laid the foundation, is not able to finish. All who see it begin to mock him. Verse 30, saying, this man began to build the tower and was not able to finish it. So it's important to be able to plan ahead, to budget. In Proverbs 21, verse 20, in Proverbs 21, verse 20, we read, there's a desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise. In other words, things of value. But those are but a foolish man squanders it. In other words, they get rid of the money as fast as they get it. Easy come, easy go, it's gone. Interestingly enough, this is a pattern that's generally set in most humans by the age of 9 years old as to whether they get rid of the money as fast as they get it or whether they save a portion of that for gratification later. In Proverbs, we're in Proverbs 21. Let's go back to verse 5. In Proverbs 21, verse 5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, meaning plenty of provisions. But those of everyone who is hasty lead surely to poverty. So we can be diligent and have plenty, or we can be hasty and surely to poverty. In Proverbs 21, verse 5, in the English Standard Version, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. So we have to be careful with our money to make it stretch for the entire feast. But what if the unexpected happens? So under money, my second point under money is we need an emergency reserve budget because things happen. We go to Proverbs 6, starting in verse 6, and we read this interesting scenario. Proverbs 6, starting in verse 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer, gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? Will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come upon you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. So we have to plan ahead. Be careful, just as the ants do. They gather in the summer, and then so they'll have food to eat in the winter. It was years ago, I was doing some, taking an action, and I asked one of my brothers if he had any suggestions. And I got the full impact of what he was saying when he said, do as you will, grasshopper, because the grasshopper wasn't planning for the down things that could happen, you know. And I think he must have read the verse about go to the ant, you know. I better think this one through. And that takes us to Proverbs 22 and verse 3. Proverbs 22 and verse 3. A prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. If the sign says bridge out ahead, how many of us hit the accelerator? Right? We want to foresee the evil and slow down and see if there's an alternate route. The simple pass on and are punished. Who did the punishment? They did it to themselves. So we have to be careful. It says prudent means wise, looking ahead. And then there's the story of in Matthew 25 about the 10 bridesmaids. In Matthew 25, starting in verse 1, about planning ahead. And the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Verse 3, those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. In other words, they took extra along with them. So they were planning ahead. So the summary of number 5 is about money. Careful planning ahead enhances our enjoyment of the feast. We won't get caught by surprises. So the 5 M's that we must control to have the best feast ever. First of all, the mouth. What we say to God, are we thankful each and every day? What we say to others, are we complimentary and uplifting? Then, what we put in our mouths, physical food, quantity and quality. And then spiritual food that we consume, remembering to pray and study each day so that we can exude the fruits of the Spirit. The second M is mind. What we put into our minds is like a computer, garbage in, garbage out. So we want the good stuff in, good stuff out. Also, with regard to our mind, is who we associate with. It's not just in person, but also who do we associate with electronically? Who do we bring in our lives by using our phones or our laptops or however, or television, electronically, to make sure that we're having uplifting relationships there. And then we must avoid being distracted by the world, as was Demas and Solomon and anybody else who would pull us away from the truth. So the third M would be mood. And really, this is about self-control. How we decide to do and be each day is up to us. We can choose to cheer up others by then building each other up. Better outcomes that way. The fourth M is manners. Manners are how we treat each other in private and in public, and it reflects the fruit of the Spirit. Are we producing the fruit of the Spirit with our manners? Is it the way that God would want us to be? The fifth M is money. Money, do we budget for a good time to be able to rejoice? Or do we budget for 4 days of rejoicing and 4 days of misery barely getting by and I can't quite get home? I know the example of that is when my oldest daughter and her husband were newlyweds, I bought them a car. It was a used car, but they traveled 2,500 miles to get to the feast to join us in Branson. And when we got there, I found out the starter wasn't working before the trip. So they had rolled the car down. They always had to park on a hill, standard transmission, roll down the hill, pop the clutch, and start the car. 2,500 miles, days it took them to get there. We went right down to an auto parts store. I got them a replacement starter and changed it in the parking lot. They promised me that wouldn't happen again. And that's when I discovered they had no spare tire. And I went, oh, okay. Promise me next time you'll have a spare tire. So they did. They promised me. The next year they came. Starter was working fine. I said, I want to see the spare tire. Oh, we have one. They showed me the spare tire was in the trunk. They had the spare tire and then they had the rim. It wasn't mounted on the rim, but they had a spare tire along. But they were young. They were just growing up. But they didn't have the prudent approach in mind. They didn't have an emergency budget. There was Dad. Dad was the emergency solution. But they were able then to rejoice at the feast. Poor old Dad had some anxieties, but we had to build them up. If we turn back to Leviticus 23 and verse 40. Leviticus 23 and verse 40. What did we start out with reading about how to keep the feast? When we read, you shall rejoice before the Lord your God. And 5 M's, controlling the 5 M's in our lives, is going to help us maximize the enjoyment, the rejoicing that we have for the Feast of Tabernacles.